thank you so much, everybody. Really excited for this talk. I've had the pleasure of hearing Christian speak at past Accelerate events as well. So really excited to have him join you today. So Christian is a associate professor at Northeastern, so right across the street from us, of the art and design, associate professor in the Department of Art and Design in the School of Architecture. He's also done incredible work with research scientists at MIT, pioneered data platform and data visualization initiatives for Singapore's key public and private urban systems operators, led initiatives with partners such as AT&T, SNCF, Audi, New England Conservatory, among a whole bunch of others, Herman Miller, for those of us in the design world. Very cool. Please welcome Christian Klokol, and off to you, Monique.
Thank you so much, Greg, for getting us kicked off here. I'm really excited to have you today, Christian. When we first met, you had incredibly interesting insights into how, you know, design actually shapes our world, how we live, how we work, but also, you know, interesting angles to approach any situation with. So I'm really excited to have you. Thank you for joining us in the Future Lab.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Greg, for the introduction. Thanks, Monique, for inviting. That's a great initiative that you've got started there, so glad to participate.
It's kind of hilarious because usually you're just across the street, and now we're Zooming in here. So I'd love to kick us off with describe for me how you currently feel about the future.
Sure. Obviously, every meeting, every initiative now we see is obviously conditioned and impacted by the much larger healthcare situation that we're facing there. For our conversation, for our talk here, it's a huge topic, obviously, and we all find ourselves with every single aspect of our life being turned upside down. For many people in dramatic ways, for other people, not so dramatic, but still impactful. One thing I think, and then we'll get to talk specifically about perhaps, what this means for designers, designs, architects, and people that can work with the situation. One thing to frame perhaps the situation is looking at it as a disruption, right? What's been happening over the past months with this pandemic and the impact of it on our lives in many different ways is that it's been a major disruption. I think what is key, and I've mentioned it often to my students also, is to remind ourselves that disruptions happen. For many of us, disruptions have happened before, of different kinds throughout our lives. It's never possible to get rid of the disruption. The disruption is there, but we always have a choice of how to deal with the disruption, what to do with the disruption. That is a choice we have. And I think that's something that is important to remind ourselves of, that while there is a disruption, we can choose. And obviously, not everything is in our ability to choose, but there are choices that we can make of how to handle that and how to, with what attitude to address this new situation. So I think that's how I also remind myself thinking about the future, is that while there has been a major disruption which none of us has chosen, which we can't as such make go away or control, in fact it's pretty uncontrollable, it's also figuring out what can we do, right? Because it's not that we can do nothing. In fact, all of us have probably experienced how in a continuous way, in an everyday a situation, we've found ourselves reinventing every single aspect of our life. All simple or most suspected to be simple routines, habits, processes, we found ourselves having to rethink. creatively. And so we can do that. We can do that. It's often painful. It's often upsetting, irritating. There's always a lack, but there's always a possibility. And I think, you know, especially coming from a design architecture realm that I understand most of your students are in as well, that is what we do. That is what we've always done. We've always critically examined life and thought, how can we, you know, is that something that we want to do? Do we change things? Do we want to change things? Are there ways to enhance things? And so I keep reminding myself that that is a way of looking to the future, actually.
That's a great frame, and actually it's super on point, which you couldn't know, because our students yesterday received an assignment where they were challenged to reinvent their home environments or to solve a problem that they're experiencing at home and just turning it into something else. So this actually resonates greatly with the students, coincidentally. Would you be comfortable in sharing like some of those iterations that you made at home and that helped you adjust maybe something you started new or maybe something you got rid of?
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of things, and there's mostly non-dramatic things. I think what it's done, and I'm happy to share some concrete examples of that, but one thing has really been that it's like moving away from a life that has its balances of various balances, and you do things, you work, you hang out with friends, you spend time with family, take time for yourself, pursue various things. And not being able to do most of these things, and definitely most of these things in the same way. And so suddenly, what you eat, the ingredients you get and where you get them from becomes a much more conscious element in. So I think it's overall, it's been becoming much more conscious about how I spend time at home with my family while my workplace has just invaded my home. Basically, that's something that many of us have experienced. Suddenly, my office has invaded home, and the same thing for my wife. So, we've got two office spaces in a place that's our home, which is also our school and our playroom for our kid, for our son. So, it's suddenly having to find ourselves to renegotiate space in the house. What is workspace? When is a place a workplace? So, it's a scheduling, a time thing. That gets constantly overthrown because obviously when things happen out of the ordinary, getting food, getting food, going to the store as a risk of exposure. So suddenly getting food is something that you limit. And so the purchasing behavior has changed radically. What kind of food you get? Realizing also that the food you get is the food you cook primarily. So then suddenly it's becoming aware, how do I nurture myself? Is that a balanced nutrition? Things that have been present, but they've just been much more conscious. I think in general, I'd say there's been a lot of focusing on the essence of thing. And I think, you know, that is an interesting thing. because once you focus on how do I eat, what do I eat, where do I get my food from, how do I socialize, how do I stay in touch with my family, also extended family, how do I spend time with friends? How do I work where, when? So suddenly focus on the essences. What does work mean? What does maintaining relationships mean? One specific routine that I'm pursuing with one older member in our family I've come to realize early on in this that especially for an old person that was used to already move little, now the movement has been restrained to close to zero, being mainly in their own house, which then brings along a lot of issues in terms of the aging process, you know, getting old, some movement being really important for a number of reasons. And so I've introduced, at a very informal way, we connect via FaceTime every evening for 10 minutes, and we do some gymnastics together with that relative of mine. And that's become a routine, which has become really interesting because it's kind of a gymnastics and it's a health aspect for that family member of mine, but it's also become an opportunity to check in once a day, very briefly. You know, it's not, we end up going for hours. We keep to 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and that shouldn't be a big burden, but checking in, and there are a few chats attached to that. And so it's become a new interesting thing. That was quite interesting. So a number of things that have changed. You know, being in touch with friends has become just a much more conscious thing. You can't invite people over. You can't go to people's places. We've started now to designing new formats. There's many new formats of encounter. You know, going for walks with friends at the 6 foot distance, meeting at the large empty parking lot with friends, sitting at a distance, having our kids bike, because biking somehow maintains this 6 foot 6 foot distance. So it's as if you know, you've got to redesign your life in a certain way and understand what is essential. You know, there's much talk in this period about essential work, essential workers, and this idea of what is the essence of things, what is essential for you, I think extends much wider than just, you know, food and health delivery, which is absolutely essential, right? But then there are various essential things for all of us, also individually, and to understand which are those things. And if I can't do them the same way that they did before, well, how can I do them? Becomes basically a design challenge.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about what you just shared is that, you know, that routine that you're now instituting every day might be something that you keep going with even after COVID might subside, because, you know, maybe the essence of nurturing that relationship may actually start to become much more in the forefront, and maybe not having had the time prior, right, is now completely reframing this. So I really appreciate you sharing that. Thank you for that. You've talked about the convergence of spaces or spheres, right? Like your workplace, the school environments, and now everything is all one. And you've spent a lot of time around convergence of spaces in the past as well. So, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, how the public realm, what role it has played for you in your thinking, and also how we consider work and how those two have really been meshed before COVID, and what it's going to look now or maybe in the future.
Yeah, and it's been actually in the conversation you and I had before today's conversation. It's been really interesting over the last weeks, sort of seeing how three different areas of my work have suddenly collapsed. I've done a lot of work on cities, you know, networked cities, hybrid cities. I've done a lot of work on work and workplace, and I've done a lot of work on improvisation, dealing with uncertainty and the unforeseeable, unpredictable. And somehow, you know, these three things have really come together in this situation that we are all addressing. In terms of the workplace, I've done work together with Brian Shiles in San Francisco and across our two architecture programs between Northeastern and Stanford University. Something, I'm just showing that because you guys can all access it. That is a book that came from that, Workplace and Public Realm. And if you, the link is on my website. If you go to my website, informationinaction.com, there's a PDF that you know, that might actually be quite interesting. It's an interesting study that we did do about this topic of the entanglement between, increasing entanglement between workplace and public life. Also the other thing, Urban Improvisation book, you find a link on my website for those of you that are interested in. But starting from workplace and public life, before COVID-19, what we've observed was how the nicely separated workplace or office building that was sort of a separate space, and people went to work, worked their 9 to 5, left work, went home or did other things. Increasingly, because of many reasons and many aspects, some of them generational, I'd say, others technological, and I can talk more to both. These two realms have increasingly converged. Fixed workplace. There's probably a multitude of areas. You know, the cafe might be a workplace sometimes, some public park might be a workplace. Sometimes on the T, on the subway, on the bus might be a workplace. Increasingly, what used to be considered public spaces and not be associated with doing work have become actually the areas of work, and it's been a merging of these two, people wanting to work in what is actually a public place. Now, the technology condition that was essential for that was an untethering of our workplace. You know, being able to work on devices just like a cell phone, disconnected, being in a park, and basically conducting a work conversation, a work meeting, or being like right now in the middle of a forest, this has made that possible for us to work at many different places. Another condition, I think, is more on the social side of things that comes with a generation, the younger generations now. We've moved away from a work-life balance, which was seen as a zero-sum game. You know, it's got a balanced work-life. If there's more life, you take away from the work. If there's more work, you take away from the life, to work-life integration. Generations today, I think younger generations, just do not accept to do work which they perhaps don't like or can't stand, and then get back to get their life. There's just been much more an explicit and imperative demand to say, the way I work needs to be something that's just part of the way I want to live. And so that's led to a whole slew of convergence between workplace environments that have informal spaces, that have cafe spaces, that have meeting spaces, that have gym spaces, that have perhaps even galleries attached, that might be accessible for people from outside the workplace. So the workplace has become something that plays a role in a neighborhood, perhaps. And understanding, that's something we talk a lot about in our publication, how a workplace, a building, a constructed environment becomes relevant to its neighborhood 24/7, right? Does it offer gym programs that are also open to people outside of the workplace, right? Or do people that work in this workplace also go and engage with institutions, organizations in the neighborhood around it? So the question of what do you include in a workplace building and what do you not include, because you want to deliberately allow for people to mingle, not because you want to as an employer, but because people tend to want to do that. People at a workplace today, and I'm talking specifically in this project about the North American knowledge industry. So that's important also, I think, to note. There's many kinds of different types of work. When we're talking about this, we're talking particularly about the knowledge industry. And so this has been one of the encounters and entanglements between workplace and public realm.
Now, when you think about the current situation we find ourselves in, and you know, having had this entanglement now for a number of years, maybe the last decade, really formed this in different shapes. What do you think is going to stick? Like, some of the things that we've been seeing, you know, they might now become really questionable, but yeah, some others might be really good, or maybe become even more intensified. How do you think it's going to look like?
So I mean, that is exactly the right question to ask. I don't have the answers, obviously, like none of us. I can share some thoughts on what seems to me. On one case, obviously, having people working cafes where people from, you know, this trend towards an encounter, an entanglement between public realm and workplace. Now is really challenged, because if we look forward to our universities starting up in fall, there's talk about close testing on campuses, contact tracing. So there's an approach where you want to really control who spends time in a space, who spends time in a space together, in order to be able to identify if there is an infection, who was exposed. So that's one direction I see. So it means basically maximum or an enhanced ability to control challenges that kind of very informal fluid move in and out between workspace and public space. On the other hand, we see, and you know, as always, since our postmodern culture, things coexist rather than being mutually exclusive. So that is one thing. At the same time, being able to do work in a park or in some other place and not only in an office space is tremendously helpful to deal with the current healthcare situation. If we think of, for example, our university campuses, there are many spaces around there. And so the question is, how can we make use of these spaces? Because we have classrooms, and it used to be the case that classes took place in classroom and work took place in offices. But you know, perhaps that is a time where we need to re-look at all the space we have in a city, in a campus, in a workplace environment, and see how can we use these spaces, because that has also been an aspect of the workplace public realm entanglement, right? That people are quite happy to work in different places. Many people prefer that, to not be tied to one specific work location. Well, guess what? That may be happening right now, just in a different kind of circumstances, conditions, with some recommendations, guidance for all of us to be working in different locations, not only based on our preference, but also or an expanded sense of preference, you know, based on infections being detected in some places, isolations, quarantines being enacted, and so forth. So I see this being challenged, but at the same time, I think this flexibility, which is a key word, obviously, in that, playing to its advantage, but in different ways than before, which we need to sort of fully uncover, I feel, in what ways we can turn this, leverage that to our advantage. And that's where I think that the third element of my work, you know, cities, workplace, and improvisation comes in. We can talk about that later.
Yeah, before we hop into improvisation, I just have a quick follow-up question regarding how we would assess, you know, some of those iterative solutions, because we definitely see some things pop up now and they're sufficing the need now. Some other solutions might actually teach us that we can be productive remotely. Not everybody has to be potentially in an office, but will that stay, you know, once we are moving back to normal, whatever the normal looks like? Or, you know, are we just going to roll some solutions into perpetuity? So I think it's interesting to think about how would we start to assess those things, or are we just going to coincidentally keep them and then they just become part of the norm? What do you think?
Yeah.
Like,
there's a number of things. I do think that, you know, in this current situation, we'll find ourselves coming up and adopting new processes, new forms. We're essentially creating, inventing new forms for activities, and some of these forms might work quite well. For example, now that all meetings are online, for many of the meetings I'm involved in, that may involve think tanks or advisory groups or also faculty meetings, participation is much higher. Participation has increased for many of the events that I've seen, just because it's much more feasible, much more doable, right? Perhaps not all people would manage to come to a specific place for a meeting at one time, but connecting remotely, and especially connecting remotely when this is not a B form of access. Yeah, not just a lesser form of accent, but everyone is just connected remotely, has actually improved participation. And so I think that is an interesting takeaway. I think that will stay. I think for many or most of our meetings, the online participation will just be a given. And the fact that this will be available there as well. And that will be a tremendous change. What you meant, though, I think actually connects us already to the improvisational approach of things, because you described there might be some ways of doing, and we need to assess, you know, how they work, whether we want to keep them, whether we're not going to keep them. I think the one thing that is key that this situation has really brought out and it's a great opportunity is whatever we set up in terms of new process, don't set things up as if that was the final goal of them, as if then that new setup would stay on. That would be the same problem with having abandoned the previous setup, right? Improvisation means acting without knowing what to expect. Improvisation. Provision is a contract, an agreement, right? Improvisation means acting without such a prior contract. It means to be able to act, to deal with the unforeseen, the unexpected. So I'm not, when I talk about improvisation, it's not about let's just make things up all the time. It's engaging quite deeply in the essence of what it means to improvise, meaning to act beyond the script, to act when there is no plan, and to actually embrace that situation rather than looking at improvisation as something that covers a lack until embracing, acting without a plan. That doesn't come out of nowhere, and that's another interesting element. Improvisation, and you can see that very clearly with musicians, with actors, is based on preparation. It's based on preparation. Actors, musicians practice a lot in order to improvise them, to on the fly adapt and adjust and respond to the situation. So in the current COVID situation, I think as designers and architects, I think it's interesting to think of whatever we design, whatever new ways of doing things we come up with, rather than coming up with new ways of doing things in a closed way, coming up with new things that are open and able to adapt and adjust to a changing context. Right now, you know, at Northeastern, and certainly also at Wentworth and all the other partner institutions here in the area, we're looking at how fall will happen. Right? But we are well aware that it makes no sense to plan anything specifically for fall because we have no idea what's going to happen. So all we can do is prepare well, get ourselves ready, right? Like a marathon runner or an athlete, so that we're able and nimble and agile to deal with whatever fall brings and the future brings, to be able to respond quickly and effectively to it with various ways. And so I think designers and architects also, whatever solution, whatever proposal you come up with, you need to create them as open things, as something that people can work with in various ways, given a change in the circumstances that they will encounter. Because we don't know for what scenario we will be designing ultimately. So I think this openness, which is key in improvisation is characterized that in improvisation, the topmost goal is to enable the improvisation to continue much more so than to come up with something and then stick to that, right? It's sort of how can you always leave things open? That doesn't mean not doing anything, but it means doing things in a way that is open, that allows people to bring themselves in, to participate, to take initiative and mold things.
So how could you take that openness that you were just describing, actually carry it to another level? So if you think about an organization being a closed system, or you know, our family units being closed systems, or you know, our friend circles are being closed systems, how can you create that openness, but also by sharing it with other entities, so you are actually leapfrogging some of that iteration, and you might be able to really improvise on completely different tangents that you didn't consider before? Like how do you facilitate that collaboration in a situation right now, because you know, time obviously is of the essence, and we are always having to stay very nimble and quick.
Yeah. So in improvisation, what we've talked about, the openness, we've talked about openness that enables taking initiative, bring yourself in and actually taking action, which changes things. Another big aspect is understanding the action, right? How do others understand what you're doing? If you're not following any plan, how does another person know what on earth you're doing? And so this understanding is key. In improvisation, in performance improvisation, there's a lot of talk about cues. Actors, musicians give cues to each other, right? I play an instrument, and from my gestures, from my looks, from my body language, you understand when I'm changing tune, when I'm passing it over to you. Feedback, I think feedback is of the essence. As designers, essentially, when you plan for open systems, you're in the business of constructing feedback systems, feedback loops. If something is changed, how will others become aware of that so that they can adapt and adjust? Right? If things follow plan, you don't need to have a feedback system because you just need to tell other people that's the plan. It'll always run that way. And then things just break, right? When we had buses follow bus schedules, people were looking up printed bus schedules, right? That worked perfectly, right? There was a bus schedule, the bus followed the bus schedule, the people knew that was the schedule, they went to the station, they met the bus. It just didn't work when one of them didn't follow the plan, right? If the bus can change the route at any time, come in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, it works as long as the feedback, as long as that bus communicates to people where it is, when it's going to arrive at the next station, which is the only thing you need to know. So if you fold that simple and straightforward example on constructing, for example, our workplace, our work environments, our urban spaces, as we move forward in this new reality where things will have to vary very rapidly between opening things up, businesses again operating, stores opening, universities opening, and then from one day to the other things locking down again. Right? Group needs to self-quarantine, the density needs to be reduced, and so forth. It's about how do you provide feedback, because otherwise people won't understand what's going on as they move from Wentworth to Northeastern. Right? Wentworth has just been opening up. Northeastern had a case and so needs to close down, for example. How do people understand that? I think that's going to be a huge thing. We're going to be finding ourselves, we already find ourselves in the business of developing etiquettes, modes of behavior. Right? What we're finding ourselves in is that the etiquette of place is being changed. Etiquette in terms of what are the norms of behavior that are accepted and acceptable in the place. Right? You go to a formal dinner, you dress up in a certain way, there are greetings of a certain kind. You go to a tennis court and play with a friend, there's different kinds of dress code. You greet your people, your friends in different ways. All these places now will have different etiquettes, which will change all the time in terms of we'll be expected to behave differently in different places in a dynamic way. So that's a huge, huge challenge and opportunity for design of how to provide feedback locally, but also a further away in terms of how people can behave, can engage in these places.
So I know we are out of time for our segment. I'm going to invite students submitting either their questions or in the chat or raising their hands so we know that you are interested in asking a question. While those are coming in, when you think about the future and you put on your visionary glasses, like what do you think is going to happen that seems completely unthinkable today? But what could be possible?
I don't know. I think, again, looking at my work on an improvisation-based design, it is to set ourselves up to be open to work with what is entirely unthinkable now, as opposed to designing for what we already see or what we expect to happen. It's really a different approach to design, I think, that's required, which is, you know, the fourth point in my design, improvisation-based design model talks about otherness. Yeah. Things are other than expected once you allow for interactions, and mm-hmm. to constructively design for such otherness to happen. Is one of the big things. So I don't know what is the big thing that will happen. I see many small things. There's many small openings. One thing looking at cities that I've been observing with interest is how spaces, public spaces are being renegotiated right now. We see this also in Boston. Boston's just announced that they're going to swiftly open up new bike lanes because of the very critical element that there will be a move away from mass transportation, public transportation, which is kind of a horror scenario for someone that's worked on cities for a long time. And public transportation has been a key element in sort of getting mobility work at the same time as reducing the environmental impact that our cities generate. And now having a situation where people may very likely shy away from public transportation, you know, for them to move to cars is like a horror scenario. And so bike lanes, bikes, pedestrian walkways, that is an interesting transformation that I'm seeing. Cities closing roads for cars to allow people to walk, dedicating space to pedestrians, bike lanes, finding a new opening. Boston's been pretty good in that. So I think this is an interesting area.
Okay, thank you so much for sharing that. We have one question coming in from Bradley. How do you influence people to initiate the behavior change that our society needs?
How do you influence people? Well, I think, you know, I think it's very simple. It's being very clear and honest to people. I think there needs to be a lot of open communication about why things are changed. I have full trust that people will buy into things. And the countries that have managed to address the current situation well, meaning like several European countries are opening up because they have literally just a few individual cases that are infected still, where all countries where there's been a clear fact-based and science-based information about the current situation that allowed people to understand what's going on and buy into that. Something that unfortunately at the federal level here has not happened, which is why this country finds its, you know, we find ourselves in a mess basically because of how the situation has been governed. It's a public health crisis, so there needs to be a public a coordination of that. And you see very well now how in different countries that's playing out differently. And so design can play a role in that. You know, how can you convey, it relates a bit to that feedback aspect that I said before, how can you convey to people how the situation changes, if it changes from day to day, right? Why is it that suddenly you know, you're reducing density to 50% in classrooms? Where you've got to tell us how that is and how you do that. I think that would be really important. That'll be really important.
So one thing that also could be interesting in that realm, like especially for universities and for, you know, classes that are still ongoing and how we are actually putting some of the ideas into the world, perhaps there is an opportunity to work with cities that are maybe now more open to install prototypes of things that we just would have taken forever in the past to actually get through.
Yeah.
Do you see that as an opportunity space?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, this would be a great time for prototyping, as you said, for trying things out, just because everything has to change in some way. We're thinking about how to, if you're thinking about, you know, things gradually opening up and us getting back to work and to learning and to studying and to doing our various things, we'll have to reinvent everything. And no one of us will know the answers of what new forms will work. Absolutely, I share that evaluation of yours, that this will be a great time, like the bike lanes, this will be a great, great time for experimentation and for prototyping, for iterative testing and see what works, yeah.
Okay, let me just check the chat to see if we have additional question coming in.
One thing also that I'm thinking of now is we talked about the essence of things. There is also a shift occurring, which I think is significant and important for designers, architects, a shift away from looking at institutions and stable forms of activity and processes towards the activities themselves and the relationships. Mm-hmm. Meaning, and that's a great opportunity for the current student generation and kids and younger generations, for them to experience so early on in their lives. Obviously, with all the hardship, I'm not talking that away or being naive about that, but the experience very early on that learning does not necessarily only happen in a university which has classes in a certain way and is organized in a certain way, because we've all just experienced that that can change, but learning can continue. And that is an extremely powerful experience to have, that, you know, you might not be able to see your friends in person, but friendships will continue. Mm-hmm. And so forth, that being able to reinvent the form of how we do things. And that's actually possible just because, obviously, in a shock experience, we all had to go through that. But that's an experience that decades of generations have not had since the Second World War, I'd say.
That's actually a quite powerful opportunity to just shape those competencies and those muscles, because yeah. Even hopefully none of them in their lifetimes will have to experience a similar massive disruption that we experience right now. It is still useful, even on smaller scales, you know, to be comfortable in iterating, improvising, experimenting, and collaborating aggressively across different disciplines.
I agree.
Okay.
I have a question. First, thank you for joining us. I have a question about you mentioning that you're working with other professors on opening up the studio for the fall, and I was wondering what some of the challenges and the ideas that you come up with. So maybe here, as you may know, that a lot of people in this program are architecture students, and we're all excited, or maybe not excited, but I think most of us are like really want to work in studio for the next fall. Mm-hmm. So how can we maybe deal with that too?
Yeah. No, that's a great point, very specific point that we are also facing at our School of Architecture right next to you guys. We don't have the answers yet, so there's no talking around. I think the architecture studio as such is one of the most challenging things to deal with in terms of this this current situation. So I don't have any formats or models that we've come up with. We've started to discuss it. There's obviously talk about reducing the density. But there's also the fact that you've got machines and people are quite close together. The studio situation as a whole in design or architecture, you know, when you get people together, when it's very much based on people actually being in place together, I think is a challenging one. I've seen myself in spring now move studio courses from in-person to online. And obviously, as you've probably experienced yourself, there was, you know, late in the year, or let's say beyond half of the year. And so it's been one thing because we've, as a group, we've engaged, we've gotten to know each other, we've gotten to work together. And then transitioning into online was feasible, I'd say, and worked well, but also because of the preparation that we've had, because we had prepped of how to work together, and so we managed to have different formats and have less of something that worked. Now fall will be different because in many ways there'll be new classes and the instructors will be working with students for the first time. So I have no direct answer for this, but perhaps one thing that I can say to that is studio is so much more than planned and organized processes, right? There's a lot of things that happen in studio, in architecture studio. You see something that someone's doing sort of just at the edge of your view, and you think, oh, it's interesting, let me chat with that person, let me ask the person. So there's so much informal dynamics going on. And I think in having moved to using online tools like this, one thing we need to be very careful about is that these online tools allow for little space, little informal space, right? We plan a time when we meet, we connect, then we disconnect, we plan who is in the meeting, right? And then that'll be only this group. No other people will just pop by or, you know, look in. So I think we need to actively plan with the tools that we have, with the distances that we might need to keep, we need to plan and come up for a wide variety of modes of encounter. Putting it simplistically and naively, we need to plan in spaces of informality, in tools that by themselves do not have them, do not bring it along. If you put 10 people in the same room, there's informality right at place, right? Everyone does whatever comes up, right? Someone mentions something, oh, I've seen that, it was really interesting. Great, there you've got something that no one ever had foreseen, we'll be talking about that. That rarely happens by itself in planned, online mediated interactions. And I think we'll need to come up with these tools. We need to come up with sessions or with places on campus physically that just sort of break the organization that we'll all be falling by. So planned informality, even though it sounds paradoxical, I think is something that'll be really helpful, especially for something like an architectural design studio.
Thank you.
I think part of what that informal collisions would actually require is the mindset shift of not worrying about what the status quo was, but instead, actually committing to the fact that it's different. And then that as an opportunity space to create something new. Because if you're still kind of hanging on to the status quo and you're still grieving that it isn't as it was, like the solutions being produced are perhaps inferior because you're not going really full steam ahead.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way of looking at it. So letting go.
Okay, well, I really appreciated you taking the time, Christian. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I hope I see you soon across the street in person. But I appreciate you being part of the Future Lab. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting, Monique. That was really great. And I look forward to seeing what things your group of students will come up with. I think it's a great initiative that you've got going there.